Do you know what you want for Christmas?
A cute toy.
No, I just want my family back.
That's what I want for Christmas.
We'll see what Santa can do, okay?
It's Christmas, so be of good cheer.
Merry Christmas.
Tis the season to watch telly on Channel 4. Stream now.
Yeah. So in a world that seems to be spinning faster, louder, and more chaotic than ever, we all carry these shadows, no matter who you are, CEOs, creatives, parents, seekers, there is darkness, that anxiety, addiction, depression, overwhelm, the sense that we're not moving forward, even though we're trying. Today, I speak with someone I deeply adore. His name is Tom Cronin. He's the founder of the Stillness Project, and meditation teacher, whose mission is bold, to ignite 1 billion people to sit in daily stillness. In this conversation, we're going to explore our shadows, why we all have them, what they're here to teach us, and how meditation and stillness can help us move through the dark and back into the light. Because even when it feels like we're not getting anywhere, every time we sit in stillness, we are actually moving the needle. Tom, it's so good to see you again. How's it going?
Yeah, really well. Thanks. Great to be here. Looking forward to this discussion. It's an important discussion, I think.
I agree. You know, every time I go in public, all I hear from people is that they're going through a struggle. Like, it feels like everybody is struggling right now. Anxiety, division, burnout. From your perspective, what's happening beneath the surface?
Such a big question. I think collectively, if we look at the timeline of our evolution as a species and we go back, you know, 5,000, 10,000, 20,000, 40,000 years or more, you know, we're moving into greater and greater levels of awareness, greater and greater levels of, I guess, connectivity. Not that we're really ever disconnected, but our levels of awareness about our connection to source, our true nature, our divine quality. And that's why all of a sudden we're seeing huge levels of religion, connection to Christianity, Islam, Judaism, but also greater levels of integration of plant medicine, yoga, meditation, breath work, qigong, kinesiology. And all of this is about bringing us closer and closer, whether it's right or wrong, but bringing us closer and closer to source, God, our divine nature. But in that process, then what has to happen is we have to start having the light shone on those parts of us that we're clinging on to, holding on to, or still playing out in our lives that are conditions, codes, constructs, traumas, wounds that need to be addressed. And we can't just move into the light while still hanging on and being aware of these deep wounds and shadows and traumas. We need to work with those and work through those and resolve those and clear those. And so there's this sort of acceleration and accentuation of this process happening. And what that means is that collectively as a species, as we move into this level of enlightenment or this awakened sort of species, as we evolve, it's just the nature of evolution that, we're going to go through a pretty intense time. And so it's not easy to start this process, as many of us will know. You know, I remember my first retreat, I thought I was just going to be all peaceful and, you know, like a Zen monk. But it was one of the most uncomfortable experiences I've ever been through. I remember it so clearly. It was complete opposite of what I thought it would be. It was really challenging and confronting and brought up a lot of stuff. And that's just the journey we have to go through to clear out a lot of the things. It's still, for me, 30 years, I'm still going through stuff and dealing with things that...
Darn it. Yeah. I wanted you to say something different. 30 years, I'm still going through it. Because I started this process on a deep, deep level. And the deeper I go, the harder it gets. And it's just, it's getting harder and harder and harder and harder and harder. And it's like the shadows are being exposed, and then it's like they're like these big monsters that you put your gloves on and you just like go to battle with. Like, that's how it feels. I don't know if you can relate to that. Does that ever change? Like, you just said 30 years. So does that ever get better?
I think the beautiful thing about the process is you become more aware of what's happening and you surrender to the process more. You get more attuned to it, more intelligent about it, more wisdom around it. And you can see that beyond that is something greater, something more conscious, more loving, more freeing, and more liberating. So then there's a willingness to go through it, almost like you relish it. So it, traditionally, in the early stages, you kind of like pull back from it because it's painful and uncomfortable, and we don't like painful experiences. It's why we've become pleasure junkies. But eventually, over time, you start realizing that that's where the real magic happens, is in those challenging times, and in that the toil and the grappling and the exploring and the releasing. So, you know, people come to my retreats for that purpose of going through a process like that. It's not as enjoyable along the way sometimes, but what happens after that is quite profound. And so a lot more people are realizing the benefits of going through the breathwork, going through the meditation journey, going through the releasing process, because they know that on the other side of that is immense rewards. It's like going to the gym. You know, at the time you're kind of sweating and grunting and it's hard and it's not easy, but at the end of it, you feel great because you feel your body's responding to that process that you've been through.
Yeah, you feel lighter. So how does stillness help us face the darkness within us?
I think what it does is that it helps us clear the clutter of distraction, which is a noisy mind. It allows us to...
Oh, that's, yeah, totally.
You know, this is the thing. It's why a lot of people go through really challenging times in the dark of the night, you know, in the physical night, or because a lot of the noise.
You know what I think?
But...
For me, it's from 1 to 3 in the afternoon when the sun is the highest. It feels like my shadows are so exposed. Yeah. I have a hard time with that time as well. It's like the lightness is like exposing all the darkness inside of me. And I'm like, oh my God, what do I do? And that's when I get anxiety, and I'm pretty grounded, but it's like this thing every single day.
Mm. I think what's important for us all to remember is that the shadows are in our ego. Okay. So our ego is riddled with and made up of all sorts of constructs and frameworks and conditions, and we call them samskaras, these imprints that have been left on us through lifetimes and ancestral and this lifetime as well. But our divine nature doesn't have the shadow. So if you think about the sun doesn't have a shadow. The sun is the source of light. And so divinity, God, is the source of light. It doesn't have a shadow. But the shadow is in our personality, our identity, our ego construct. And so we want to start to discriminate between what is our divine nature, which has no shadows, pure love, pure bliss, pure light, and then where the shadow exists, which is in our ego. So I still have some ego, which means I therefore must have still some shadow, because it's a form. And any form, if you shine the light on a form, it creates a shadow. And so if my ego, which is a form, then it has the potential for shadow. And that's true. My ego does have shadow. So it has anxieties, it has jealousies, it has fears, it has desires and all sorts of things that still I have to grapple with, and I have to process, and I have to address, and have to check that they're not taking over my life and determining the course of action in my life.
Right, right.
As we do, coming back to your question about stillness, what stillness does is that stillness is not just an empty space. Stillness is accessing the field of conscious awareness that is able to look at the shadow and then from a loving place start to work with that shadow and see what I can do to improve all of those situations that may be wreaking havoc in your life, and how to diminish that influence of the shadow in your life.
Yeah, I was just going to ask what the point of the shadow is. But before I do, I want to expand on something you said earlier about how it gets easier. And when I first started processing a lot of my trauma, it was really painful. It was hard to sit with it. But now, like you said, it's like when it happens, it's a gift. And I actually thank Source or God or whatever you want to call it in your life. And it's, I can feel my body release after. It's like this feeling of light that comes through my vessel. And so I thank source for that release. And then I feel lighter and then I get almost excited about it. So I can relate to that feeling. It's like, yes, I just processed something real deep because that was like a deep, deep, deep rooted sob that was coming up, right? Like you can feel it coming up. And sometimes you can even, or sometimes when I'm processing, the memory of the whatever event it was will pop up out of nowhere. It's like all of a sudden I have a memory of like my grade two teacher, doing something that was horrible, out of the blue, and then it comes out and it processes. And yeah, just the ability to watch it and not attach emotion to it. So to me, that's what stillness does to help me.
Yeah, it creates space, for a lot of people in the world, and myself included, for many years, it's just a constant process of distraction, just not even knowing that it's there. We're just so obsessed and distracted by the external world, what we're buying, what we're experiencing, all of our pleasures and all of our desires getting fulfilled in the external world. Stillness, meditation, creating space in our day to do that inward journey, going on retreats, doing breathwork sessions, if it's therapy for you, whatever your methodology is, to allow that inquiry to look inward. I think it's an interesting time that we're doing more and more of that in our world these days. And it doesn't mean navel gazing and self-obsession. It means looking at how do you become a better person by addressing the parts of you that are somehow influencing your life in a negative way.
Yeah, I know a lot of people don't understand it and will accuse someone of being like self-absorbed or selfish for wanting to spend all that time with themselves to better themselves. But it's like, how else do you do it really? And do you think more people are understanding this new way? Because everywhere I look, it's all about healing. And you and I were talking about this before. People are wanting to go on healing retreats now instead of going to Mexico to get drunk for a week. Do you see the world shifting right now?
Yeah, absolutely. We're probably one of the first generations in the Western world to, in if you look at all of us in our lineage of our family ancestry, our parents, our grandparents, our great grandparents, there'd be very few listening or here today that that their parents or grandparents or great grandparents had done some form of healing and processing and releasing of accumulated traumas and stresses. Yet we're in this huge evolutionary transitional point now as a species, where this is probably the first generation that, on a bigger level, and obviously the next generation is going to be even bigger, where this becomes a really big part of our life to start to do this healing process of ancestral and accumulated stresses from this lifetime as well. And that's why we're seeing people take holidays on healing retreats as opposed to getting wasted. So instead of just constant layers of stress coming in and getting added, we're now in a process of starting to clear and remove. And this is a big shift for humanity, because it's only going to take one or two generations for a backlog of a lot of wounds and traumas and samskaras to be cleared out, which really is, I think, the entry point for us to move into Satyuga, the age of enlightenment, or Game B, as some other people call it.
That excites me. It feels like a video game, like getting to that next level. I never would have imagined like my 20-year-old self is laughing her ass off at me, thinking that I'm going on a retreat for a holiday to be in stillness and heal and work on trauma and these plant medicine retreats, like even like just getting yourself so sick to balance your body. It's just such an interesting time.
Yeah, it's not easy. When we're going through these transitions, any transition is difficult. When we're moving house, going from one house to the other house, the transition itself is awkward and clunky and uncomfortable. When we're moving from yoga pose from one to the other, that's clunky and uncomfortable. When moving jobs, when we're moving relationships, anything in that transition is usually this place of unknown, this uncertainty, this instability. And this is what we're going through individually, as a lot of us are going through a transition of being asleep to being awake. And we're doing that collectively, which is going to be uncomfortable for us. And it could take, a few decades, it could take a few centuries, but this process has started. And we've had great oracles and guides and leaders for the last few thousand years, the Buddhas, the Muhammads, the Christs, and whoever you want to pinpoint as a point of substance to guide us and show the way. Paramahansa Yogananda and Ramana Maharshi and Sri Sri Anandamayi Ma. There's so many great spiritual guides and saints and sages that have given us a sort of a beacon. And we're just seeing this incredible proliferation and growth of great leaders in our world currently, you know, from your Deepaks and your Neil Donald Walshes and your there's just so many great leaders, the Mujis of the world that are, there's just thousands of them now coming into the world stage, yourself included, that are, you know, showing people, whether it's, you know, on a large scale or on a small scale, there's lots of people starting to want to share the insights, the things that they've found that have helped them heal and move forward.
Yeah, well, you've seen both extremes, the high pressure finance and the inner stillness. So what do you think your own darkness revealed to you? Like, do you feel like if you didn't go through that, you wouldn't be where you are today? Or how do you view that time?
Gosh, how do I review that time? The time was a function of acting from the ego, which is always in an insatiable place of desire and needing more.
Yeah.
It never has a state of contentment and enchantment, and peace. It's really, it's almost impossible if there's just ego to find that state of peace. And so the pain and the suffering that I went through as a result of that way of living was really just, it's all just evolution. It's the mechanics of evolution and intelligent design that is supporting and guiding us. And sometimes it's going to need the stick, which will be some very uncomfortable experiences to guide us. And sometimes it will use the carrot to lure us into a better way forward. Quite often, more often than not, it needs the stick because we're quite stubborn. And so for me, it was like, you know, it just bestowed on me some really painful experiences, which was just its methodology, which is my methodology because it's not my as in me personally, but me as in the unified field because it's all oneness. And that's the expansive version of me guiding me to start to realize my true nature. And that was kind of like a getting a rap on the knuckles every now and then. I still get them every now and then, which is kind of like, yep, you just gotta, and this is kind of like constantly guiding and refining us on our journey.
So, how can meditation help someone who is in the middle of pain, fear, or confusion when sitting still to them feels impossible, but also to the people out there who feel like, you know, they've been meditating for months and months and months and nothing is happening?
Firstly, I check in with them and ask them what style of meditation they're doing. Because if they're just listening to Matthew McConaughey on the Calm app, reading the bedtime stories, and you've got a frenetic mind that's in sympathetic nervous system, and you've got your body full of cortisol and adrenaline, you've had 4 cups of coffee, and you've been on your phone all day long, it's very hard to access those
That's
deep
not
states.
normal. I'm just kidding.
It's very hard to access those deeper states of quiet, you know. So I definitely look at the meditation style. Some meditation techniques aren't conducive to those deeper states of transcendence or going into that state beyond thought.
Yeah, it's true. There's so many things out there that are named meditation. And then when I'm listening to them, I'm like, is this really a meditation?
Look, I mean, I think meditation can fit into so many categories, and I think it's very broad, but there's deeper styles and there's guided ones and there's contemplation ones. So there's lots of different ways that we can, I guess, consider us meditating. But I think what's really important is that we want to discriminate between or discern between what stillness is and not making stillness the goal, but really wanting to have a practice that takes us into what's called transcendence. And transcendence is where the mind has gone beyond the thinking realm and the world of duality, where it's thinking about the world outside of you, because that's where your thoughts go to something outside of you. Your friends, your Bitcoin, your sports team, your political party that you like, or whatever it is. It goes to some place in the future, past, or present that creates this duality, which is the subject, the thinking mind, and the place where the mind goes, which is the object. And this duality, where there's two things, subject and object phenomenon, is this constant, and a lot of meditations keep us in that duality because there's always the thinker that's thinking about the thing that you're meditating on. But to transcend means to go beyond the thinking mind, which means to go beyond the identity. Now, stillness is the byproduct of what happens when the mind finds this blissful utopian paradigm. And so
Um.
this transcendent state we call Turiya, the fourth state, is a really important state to get into because it gives us access to this beautiful, blissful experience. And as a result of the bliss in that beautiful state of pure consciousness, the mind by default becomes still because it's satiated. So we're not trying to get to stillness. We want to just lead the mind to the bliss of being. And by default, it will start to become less fluctuating, less insatiable, and less more satisfied, more fulfilled. And then it becomes still as a result of that. And then from there, what happens is we now get out of the thinking mind and we get into conscious field of mind, which is not the personal mind, which is not the individual mind. It's a field of conscious awareness. And it's not personified with your own individual blueprint of your personality. So that's a really important part in the process. And finding a technique, for me, I found Vedic meditation or transcendental meditation to be a very effective methodology to get into that. There are many other forms of meditation because the space is already there. It's a matter of what vehicle do you want to use to get there.
Right. So I know for me, and I think we've talked about this before, but I also practice transcendental meditation. And some days I feel like I'm meditating and I'm like floating in another dimension. And other days I'm like, oh my God, I can't sit still like today. Does that still happen to you? Because you've been meditating for 30 years. Has it been 30 years?
Yeah, 30 years. Look, I mean, it's not a matter of, oh, I can't sit still, but there's definitely some days where the repetition of the mantra won't lead me into transcendence. And that just might be that there's some stresses that need to release within the physiology. My body still has stresses in it. So when I start to de-excite the mind, this de-excites the body and this starts releasing some of those stresses, which prevents us from dropping into those deeper states sometimes. So yeah, absolutely. Some meditations, it's just kind of like quite a busy meditation, particularly my morning meditations are usually quite busy, where the afternoon ones go a little bit more deeper. Some days I'll go for long, long, deep meditations for a few hours, and that will be a deep transcendent experience. But for generally for the most meditators, we recommend just 15, 20 minutes, close the eyes, get your mantra from your teacher, start meditating with the mantra and just take it as it comes. Sometimes it might just be busy, and that's okay. Sometimes it might be really deep, and that's okay. Whatever it is, we just take it as it comes, and there's no expectation.
Yeah, I remember my teacher telling me everything is good, no matter what you're doing is good. She just kept telling me it's all good. Just do it. It's so what you're basically saying is that if we're practicing, you can't really go wrong, and it is moving the needle, even if it's just like the tiniest little bit.
Yeah, look, it's so powerful. Just the idea of firstly closing your eyes, that alone for 20 minutes, where you're sitting upright and not sleeping, is really powerful. The second thing to add to that layer of transformation is that you now have this repetition of a mantra, a primordial resonance or vibration that is going to have an impact on your brain slowing down and it being less frenetic, looking for more and more information, particularly with social media and Instagram and our phones. So those two things alone are really powerful. The third thing is just sitting in a chair and not moving. So now you've closed your eyes, you're withdrawn from sensory overload. You now have a mantra to bring your mind's attention to that center point. And then you're just sitting in a chair, not moving. So those three things, no matter what happens in your meditation, is really beneficial for you alone. And then the bonus is what happens in the meditation. You might go deep and that's going to be, or you might just be releasing stress and that's going to be really good for you as well.
Yeah. So what's actually happening in the body and nervous system when we're sitting in stillness, especially in those dark, dark emotional times?
Well, there's two things. One is the dropping in into the stillness will lead us to really phenomenally deep states of rest in the body. And that's because the mind now is satiated. It's found bliss. It's fulfilled. It doesn't go looking for something to go and grapple with or something to contemplate.
Yeah.
Because it's
butterfly.
Fulfilled. Yeah. So if the mind is now very still and very stable because it's satiated with bliss, this leads to stillness in the physiology, then that starts to trigger this stress releasing. Okay. So now what can happen in those states of deep rest is that we may start releasing some physiological or energetic, let's just say energetic emotions in the body that are in the physiology that start to starts to release out of the body. The body identifies that there's a problem. It identifies that this is an alien substance that's not meant to be in the body. Just as when we put a cast around a broken leg, the cast is just creating stillness, and that allows the body to start healing this anomaly, this disruption. And so when we go into stillness in the meditation, it then allows the body to start to identify where there's some issues and some anomalies, and then to start to work on releasing those. And that's when we start to find this bubbling up of these emotions that are dormant energies, energy in motion, emotion, that as the body goes into these higher states of peace and love and bliss and high vibrational frequencies, the lower frequencies have to now extract themselves out of the body. And so a lot of people go, I had this very emotional, painful experience in my meditation. It was like, no, you were releasing something that was in your body from a previous experience in your lifetime that wasn't released at that particular point in time. And a lot of these energies get trapped in the body. It's very physiological. And this is the thing with a lot of spiritual practices, that there's a disregard for how much the physiology is storing these stresses. A lot of it's not, most of it's not in the mind, most of it's in the body. And the only way it can get out of the body is to actually release itself. And that's when we have these quite rupturous emotional releases sometimes in spiritual practices like breathwork, meditation, plant medicines, of course, we can find ourselves having some really big releases.
Yeah, I recently cut out nicotine, and whatever I was using nicotine to cover up, it's been coming out. And it was actually last night, I had this really deep emotional release, and it was like so deep, like deep, deep sobs. And after it was over and I got through it, my psoas muscle started quivering. And it was like, so that trauma was like being released from that area of my body is what it felt like. And that area has been like so sore and so tight. And so I got pretty excited about it. But I also believe that there's so much trapped in our body because we were never taught how to deal with it. Like growing up, I was just taught to, you know, push harder, go harder, ignore it, work harder, have a cup of coffee, kind of fight it, ignore it, run from it. And now all those things are coming out and processing, and my muscles are like twitching, and I don't know if they're jumping around in excitement or what, but the physiological part is real for sure.
You know, if we just take the scenario of anyone listening, when you're lying in bed and you're just about to fall asleep, and what's happened here is a really interesting phenomenon. The mind is getting quieter as we're moving away from interactivity with the external world, less mental fluctuations, less movements in the mind. This is leading to a physiological level of de-excitement and rest coming into the body as we're moving closer and closer to sleep, where we go unconscious and into a physiological state of inertness. That's why we have to lie down, because there's no muscle control. And then what can happen in that moment, it's a very distinct moment where there's no thoughts in the mind, and yet we're not quite asleep. This is actually transcendence in a nanosecond when we're transitioning from being awake to being asleep. And this is when we get those jolts and twitches and spasms, right? And so what's happening is that we're dropping into a really deep state of almost like meditation very temporarily before we come unconscious, go into unconsciousness, which is sleep. And then that allows the body this very powerful moment to release these physiological stresses. And they can be twitches and spasms. It might be in the belly, it might be in the leg, it might be in the shoulder, it might be in the whole body, as we release some sort of energy that's still left in the body that needs to come out before we can drop into the level of sleep. So very similar thing happening when we get those twitches and spasms when we're going to sleep that we'll find happening with places and experiences like meditation as well.
Yeah, it's so interesting. So you created the Stillness Project. And when I learned transcendental meditation, I learned in a group. And I remember when we were all meditating together, how much, I don't know if I want to say more powerful, because I don't want to put a limit on the power of meditating by yourself, but there is so much power in meditating as a group. Can you talk a little bit about that and about your amazing project?
Yeah, and the Stillness Project was created with this vision, knowing that meditation had a huge impact on making my life better and making me a better person. Not perfect, that's for sure. It's still a work in progress, but certainly, still definitely a work in progress. But when I could see that what it was doing to me, but also other people around me, then I realized that a lot of the world's problems was coming from the state of consciousness that we're in. And that if more people meditated, it would shift their state of consciousness. One thing we can notice about people that meditate for long periods of time is that there seems to be a consistency, not that they become perfect, like we said, but there's a general inclination for them to become kinder, more caring, more compassionate, and more appreciative of the world around them, whether it's nature and humans. And so I realized that if I wanted to create impact in the world, the best thing I could do personally for me, because of my skill set, was to bring meditation to as many people's lives as possible. So that was the Stillness Project, to inspire 1 billion people to meditate daily. And it's an ongoing process that I'm in, which is why I'm even on this podcast today, that inspires all of that. But what we've found as well is that we have this incredible phenomenon called an event horizon, which is a sphere of influence. So we all have this sphere of influence. Every form and phenomenon has a sphere of influence. So if you think of the sun, has a sphere of influence beyond its physical mass, which is just a ball of fire. But if I stand out in the sun, it's getting close to summer now, it's going to be a hot day today. If I put my skin under the sun for 45 minutes without sun cream, then it's going to actually singe my skin and start to burn it. So the sphere of influence goes way beyond the actual physical object. If we go all the way to Pluto, the vibrational and energetic resonance and the magnetic influence of the sun keeps Pluto in its orbit, right? So the moon has a sphere of influence, which influences the tides on the planet. The trees have an influence. They produce oxygen and take away carbon dioxide. And so all these phenomenons, this sphere of influence from all these objects and forms. And so when we look at our own individual sphere of influence and the vibrational resonance that we're emitting out into the world, the things that we say, the things that we do, the things that we think, the things that we feel are all leaving impressions and impacts on the world around us. And so if we've got a world that's traumatized and wounded and in fear or anger and rage and wrath, then that's going to continue to leave impressions on the world, which is what we've seen in the past. But if we've got a world collectively, 7, 8 billion people in a state of loving kindness and consideration and care and compassion, then that's going to be the influence and the impression left on the world. And so what I felt was that the best thing we can do is just collectively more and more people become more conscious, more awake, and more realized in their true nature.
Yeah, you can definitely feel it in a group of in a large group of meditators. The energy is just, I don't know if you've never experienced it, anyone out there, you really should, because it's a powerful place, and it the energy is like vibrates. I don't know, it's a powerful feeling. It makes me have hope that the world is going to get better. It just feels like such a challenging time right now. Like even myself, it's just like every time I feel like things are getting easier and easier and easier, then it's like we talked about before, like being like that boomerang effect, like having to go back down and then dig deeper. And it's like, gosh, when is this gonna end?
Yeah. It's evolution. Unfortunately, evolution never ends. It's an ongoing process. But I think it's a journey that we have to go through. And on the other side of that, will be longer windows of that clarity, longer windows of the peace and calm, and longer windows of the overriding experience of love and compassion and kindness. So being in the process is not easy, but it's something we have to do.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So, if you could leave our listeners with one message about why their shadow actually matters, what would you tell them?
Why it matters? I think it's less about why it matters. I think it's more of that it is. It just is. And there is a shadow side, and it's not good and bad. It's not right and wrong. It just is. And to understand that, to acknowledge that, to be humble to it, to recognize it, to work within that, work with that, to be committed to not letting it run rampant in our lives and see if we can curtail it and love it. And it's a complex area, you know. There's a lot of processes called shadow work. People can go to practitioners and get shadow work done. And in our tradition, in the Vedic tradition, there was a sort of a distinct lack of recognition of the shadow side, and it was just all about, hey, you're just, you're just the divine, and that's all there is. But it's like I noticed in myself and other people in the tradition and other teachers that hey, we still have some stuff going on. Like, what's this all about? What's this murky stuff and this things that just aren't just love and bliss. There are other things as well. And so I think being a little bit more sensitive and compassionate and aware of these this part of us that shouldn't be swept under the carpet and ignored, but just to be acknowledged and start to be loved and work with it.
So, Tom, before we go, tell everyone about the work that you do and where people can find out more information about you.
My website, tomcronin.com, is a great place to go and find an array of different things that I do. And Instagram's a great place to reach out and connect with me if you want to say hi. I like to respond to all my messages there on Instagram. And the work that I do is predominantly teach meditation, run retreats, but I also do coaching for conscious leaders, helping them to find their voice, their message, and their business model that helps them get out into the world. So that's in the Zen Academy. So it's kind of a bit diverse where I work with corporations, I speak on stages and run retreats and teach meditation, quite a few different things.
Yeah, you go to workplaces and you teach meditation. Or do you find there's more and more workplaces that are getting into this?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's out of necessity. We used to find meditation was a want, whereas these days it's becoming more of a need as we have staff really grappling with
That's so
stresses.
awesome.
And it's a function of where the world's at. We just have a very stressed and overwhelmed world right now.
Yeah, amazing. Well, thanks so much for being here and for talking about the darkness with me. Not a lot of people go there, but I love it. That's something that we need to talk about. And people who are out there and they're like these spiritual, like it's like they're walking on rainbows. I just don't buy it. I just don't buy it. And we have to acknowledge these dark sides of ourselves and face them, whether it's with gloves on, whether it's with meditation and stillness, whatever it takes.
Yeah, absolutely. I really feel with gratitude that you've created the space for us to have this conversation and that you address these things because it's very easy to ignore them and just be caught up in the whole love, peace, among beings. But it's good to make sure that we get a balanced perspective of the reality of life.
Yeah, I like balance. Balance is good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for inviting me along. It's been great to be here. And thanks everyone for listening in and tuning in for this.
Awesome. And to our listeners, please do not forget to like and subscribe before you leave today. We will have Tom Cronin's website in the show notes so you can learn more about what he does and learn about transcendental meditation and the coaching program. But try and sit in stillness and try and face the darkness. It's difficult, but it definitely gets easier. Trust us. Have a good time, everyone. Bye.